I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emmett Mann. Rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platforms, on YouTube. Like, thumbs up, subscribe, do all the fun stuff there. Very excited for today's guest, CJ Miles, former Raptor, NBA vet, been doing it for a long, long time, and he is an expert in this category, which is shooting. CJ, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing? Good?
Yeah, I'm doing solid. Enjoying the summertime, enjoying some time off. Every time I look at your IG, it seems like you are working out. So you are grinding.
But I mean, at this point in my life, like working out is a part of my life. So I don't think that's ever really going to go away. I know it's associated with, you know, obviously my profession. I've done it for a long time. So it looks like, you know, that it's only for that. But I truly enjoy just, you know, being in shape, feeling good. So.
Was that always a part of you, or do you think because of your experience?
I think I got better over time. I started to, you know, just realize how much better I felt. And then when I wasn't where I wasn't in shape like I was and how I felt, and I started to not like that feeling.
Yeah.
Especially knowing where I could be and then wanting to know how much further I could get from that space. So it became driving thing. And then one of my biggest things too is, like, you know, you want to be as healthy and happy as long as you can be. So that's the other thing. I want to keep moving as long as I can, because I feel like the second I stop, that's when it's going to start.
It's not like that for everyone, though. I'm not going to name any names, but we've seen other NBA players, as soon as they end their careers, or I'm not saying that you're done with your career, but as soon as they stop playing basketball, they're like, well, gonna let loose, gonna get the beers in and get the food in, because they've been doing it for so long.
I think I get it too, but I think my outlook on it changed, which is why that's not going to be a part of me. I think for so long, you know, it does feel like it's just part of the job. Like, I got to work out. I got to be in this shape. I got to train. I got to do this. I think during the pandemic, because I was coming off those two surgeries, they were minor, but they took time. So I had time to really find that space where, you know, became more for me than anything, because I wasn't playing. I wasn't under contract. I had got waived by the Wizards because I wasn't going to be healthy in time to help them. So they needed to get a fresh body in there. So, you know, I had every reason to kind of just sit. And for a while I had to. And during that space, I was like, I hate this feeling.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure I don't get that feeling again.
I also know you're a girl dad, hashtag girl dad. So you're doing it for them. I can relate to that. I got a daughter of my own. Okay. So with CJ, as I alluded to earlier, we were going to talk about shooting. Full disclosure, this happened because he happened to comment on something that I'd noticed about Scottie Barnes' jump shot. And I'm like, hey, CJ, do you want to hop on a podcast and talk about shooting and the mechanics and all the fun little intricacies of becoming a good shooter? And graciously, he decided to say, yeah, let's talk about shooting. So kind of a cool little how that worked out. Normally, it's a little bit more official through emails and stuff like that.
This to come from that tweet. Also,
what's that?
I didn't expect any of this to come from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to make it sound like it's a burning or anything. I'm just saying, like, I had no idea a bunch of people were going to hit me up about it. I had no idea a bunch of people were going to, but I just saw it and reacted to it. I'm glad there's,
you
know, from it, and it's just going to be fun. And, you know, but that was really funny, actually.
Yeah, man, for sure. And like, that's kind of my grind, is that you're hoping something like that, like a little tweet to a player, is going to work out and end up being like this. I am actually curious, because I had no idea until I did some research on this, that you went to the NBA right out of high school.
Yeah. I was the last year that they allowed it. So that's one thing, you know, that's kind of cool, you know, being part of something that can't be really done anymore, even though the league is still getting younger somehow. But And they have all the other ways you can go about it now with the Ignite, and which I spent some time with. Guys are going overseas now, you know, just trying to gain some experience before they step in. And I think it makes sense for some guys. And I think for some guys, they need the college experience.
Then you spent a couple of years in the D League, which in some ways was kind of your college experience, although obviously very different. You're playing against grown men.
I was ending up being on a team that was sending me back and forth, though. So I wasn't just on. So I got both sides of it.
True. And then you made that, you got the offer sheet from OKC, and then Utah's like, okay, well, if that's going to happen, then I guess we got to sign CJ to a long-term contract. And that worked out pretty well for you because you had a great career in Utah too.
Yes. We were talking about it in the gym the other day. It's almost like I had like three careers, like just because that first 7 years in Utah, and then there's like the middle between Cleveland, Indiana, and then there's Toronto when you get there, and it seems like another chapter. It's been fun, you know?
Yeah, no question. Any regrets about the decision to go right out of high school? Or do you feel like, I mean, you don't have the college experience to compare it to, but do you feel like still that was the best course of action?
I mean, being totally honest, like as an adult, as a 35-year-old man now, like talent-wise, yes, I was ready to play. Like I had the skill set. I had a few skills that I thought that translated well, like mentally, but how could I be? It's just you go from being the man, the best guy, and every day pretty much you walk in to being told you're not good enough right now. Never heard those words in your life. And it doesn't matter how hard I'm working, because there's just a curve that I got to catch up. And then there's just guys that have experience that no matter how talented the kid is, that experience is going to trump it at some point. Especially when you go to play for the late, great Jerry Sloan, God rest his soul. You know, we know how he felt about young guys. He was adamant about it. and I just happened to be the youngest guy in Jazz history walking in the building. So that wasn't going to change because I could run and jump and shoot the basketball. I think it was hard, but I don't regret any of it. I think the route that I took made me, you know, the man I am. It showed me a lot of things I had to learn about myself. And we don't know if me going to college and becoming a freshman pick leads to me playing 16 years.
Sure.
Like maybe my route had to be that way for me to learn how to play 16 years. So I think it's all, everything happens the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Right. When you think about, I wouldn't classify you as a shooter because you did a lot more than that. You could get to the basket, you could attack closeouts, you could definitely dunk on people because there is a highlight reel that exists of you doing that.
DeMond finds CJ on the floor. Contested, no! He dunks on the former Raptor, Patrick Patterson, miles to the rim.
But how did you kind of create that niche where you said that, you know, shooting is going to be how I'm going to attack on the offensive end? When did that switch happen? When did you realize that that was something that you were really, really good at?
So through my Utah years, I could shoot it, but I was streaky. I was much more of a scorer, if you will. Like I was like but I was always the third or fourth option on the floor all the time. So that, so one of the things coming from being in that spacing was to give my team more spacing and to give myself more opportunities, I needed to be able to shoot the ball better from that clip and with better range and, you know, off the move, just different options of things because I wanted to play more, but I needed to figure out the different ways I could help my team. It wasn't what I could do. I knew I could do other things, but it was what did my team need. My team needed me to do this, not go get mad because they won't let me do what I think I can do. So I wanted to create opportunities for myself so that, over time became the thing that everybody needed. Everybody still needs it. Everybody talking about it right now. And then I got to Cleveland and Mike Brown sat me down. Mike Brown said to me the exact words. He was like, you shoot the ball too well for me to not see you spend more time on that part of your game. And that was the year after, that was right after I got out of Utah. And I had never thought about it that way. But then I think about, I'm playing with Darren Williams and Carlos Boozer and Andre Kanlicko, who's pretty much a ball handler at that time.
Yeah.
Then I go to Cleveland, I play with Kyrie Irving, who's definitely a ball handler. You know, it's done Kyrie, where this is the molding of him and everything is kind of run through him. And so I was like, how do I help this team, myself, the players I'm on the floor with? And after Mike Brown sat me down, it changed my focus on shooting. Like it changed my focus on footwork. It changed my focus on all the little, like you said, tiny things that made such a big difference.
Was that a tough thing for you to realize or to come to grips with? Because I would imagine, you know, like you talked about earlier, being told that this is how you are going to be effective versus you want to be able to do like, you know, these, this many things, they're saying, hone in on this and become great at it. Was it an easy transition or were you resistant?
No, that was easy for me because it was literally someone saying, hey, here's how you can get more minutes.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it anyway. I took it as here's how you can make more opportunities for yourself. It's the one time you get to be selfish for your team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I got you.
The better I am, the better we are type thing. And that was the way I took it. And then it became now, with all the work being put into it, translating that confidence to the game to carry that threat of taking 12 threes in the game and not thinking twice about it.
It's kind of cool too. Coach is like, he shot 12 threes. Good.
Exactly. I had another incident in literally in Indiana. Nate McMillan, he was our coach. We sat down and watched the film and he showed plays of what my strengths were and what he thought for this team and what he thought I should be doing and not doing. And it was breakdowns of me passing up threes, basically. And there was another time, you know, just if you don't get it now, like when are you going to get it, you know? And I think Indiana is when I really carried that threat the best and in the best way with that. And I had a really good fit with that team.
When I was looking at highlights of you, there were so many cases where you could hear the commentators saying, this guy, like as soon as he gets going, like he's off to the races. And all of a sudden, one three can become four or five threes. So when you became like decided that you're going to be a shooter, was there a person or people, I guess, that you modeled your game after or people that you were kind of trying to emulate because you wanted to be able to get the footwork down and the release down and so forth?
So first, my guy in this aspect of like the guy I watched and the guy I wanted to be Ray Allen.
Gets a screen from Radmanovich with nine, spins away from Grant, drives into the lane to the glass, goes up and under and lays it in. A magnificent move by Ray Allen. Holy cow.
Like that's who I wanted to be even earlier in my career. And, you know, early he didn't shoot as many threes, but known for shooting the ball with the ball on the floor, a little bit of this. I wanted to be able to be that complete. And then, in Utah, we traded for Kyle Korver, and I took a lot from him just watching him. It wasn't per se just like him giving me a book or anything, but I just watched him. I just watched the way he warmed up for games. I watched things he did after practice, and I shot with him a lot after practice, and he might have kicked my tail for 2 weeks. But the second I started to win some games, that's his time. That's letting me know that which way I'm going. And then from there, it was just taking in as much knowledge as I could about it. Any coach I was with, any player that I was with that did this and was in that field as far as shooting the basketball and really into the particulars, I took anything I could and I started making routines out of the best things that worked for me, the things I didn't do naturally and the things that sharpened the things I did do naturally.
What games were you playing with Kyle Korver?
It was literally just shooting games. From the free throw line, we used to play golf all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Swish minus one misses. You know, we used to play all the time, and then there was more mid range shot after practice back then because you were still shooting in the game. So we would start. We would just build our way out. We'd be first to five or best out of seven, whatever it is at every spot, and then we'd just be a lot of shots, and we just go around. Because even the days that it wasn't so a game, it was still competitive. Obviously, like you know what I mean. Like yeah, we might not be saying. You know, first or whatever, but if we go into 10 together, I'm going to try to make more of the 10 than you.
Obviously,
like,
of course. That's exactly. Life.
I think that gave me an edge on shooting also because I just wanted to beat him because I was like, if I could beat him, I could then beat everybody. Like, sure. So
players really do count swishes.
Yeah. From the free throw line. I'm like that now. I don't stop. Like when I finish a workout, I have to make, I have to make three swishes in a row after like making 20 free throws to stop. So if I make 20 and then there's three swishes in a row after that, and that's how I end the workout. Don't make them, you shoot them, you make three swishes in a row.
Do you guys ever count swishes from three?
There's been times we do it, but it's not as
it's harder.
It doesn't have so much weight on shooting games as like a free throw one would.
It's like little things like that. That's how you know NBA players are just built a little bit differently. Like we, you know, us norms, us pawns, we're just counting, oh, I got the basket. Oh, I got the ball in the hoop. Cool. But no, you guys are counting swishes. That's different.
I mean, it's no different than you and your field in this right now. Yeah. Like I need to craft the interview. It would take me, I don't know, it'd take me forever. Like, or I wouldn't know what questions to ask or how to really make a conversation move in a manner want to watch and hear me talk. You spend a lot of time doing that. You studied it. You had a lot of reps at it. So if you come in the gym, you're going to see me do something that I've surpassed 10,000 hours by far.
Yeah.
You know, sure. You know what I mean? So like, it's the same thing.
I remember Nick Nurse, when I was talking to Danny Green back in December. Yeah. December. And he just by accident mentioned that Nick Nurse has like this term where you got to spend your 5,000 hours or 10,000 hours on something. And it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether it's like for Nick, it was like learning to play with the guitar or whatever the case is, but you got to put your 10,000 hours in. All right. So how are shooters built differently? What's different about that?
I think there's a confidence you have to carry, I think, because, and you have to be a person that believes in your work. You have to work. But I mean, that's where the confidence comes from for me. Like I was a guy like kind of overworked in that area because I wasn't, there's some guys that naturally, that shooters become naturally sitting like, I could shoot the ball, but I wasn't per se a shooter. So I built myself into this role, into these situations where I got to be called this and given these opportunities. Like this has come from literally from the ground up, from changing my footwork to changing my release to changing the points to the pocket points I picked the ball up, all of these things.
Yeah.
So for me, that's where my confidence comes from. It's because if I was able to, all that work that I've done, there's no reason why I can't make this shot. Or there's no reason why me missing three should stop me from shooting the next three. And don't get me wrong, like everybody goes through their ups and downs and you don't always carry it the way you should, but which could, you know, determine some makes and misses just based off that. And you can always tell when it's that. It's when you're trying to make it instead of just shooting it, letting the muscle memory take over and not being in thought.
So that's what got you through some of the droughts, I would imagine. That's what
gets me through them because I know when I come out, like the numbers will always even out. So like, I just got to keep taking my shots. Obviously, you won't be overly aggressive in those times because you're clearly trying to get through something. But I know coming out of that if it was a little slump, it's going to even out. If it's a big slump, it's going to even out in a big way also. There's going to be 8, 9, 10, a month of shooting 42%, 44% sometimes. It's going to happen. It's going to bring me back around because I worked too hard on it. I'm still doing those same workouts, whether I'm making shots or not.
How many times did you tweak your jump shot while you're in the NBA? Was it a constant up and down thing? Because I know like eventually, you know, towards the end, you were getting your shot off really fast. Like it was like in a heartbeat. So was that something that you had to build towards or did you have a lot of variance in your jump shot?
That was definitely something that we built. I used to put my shot back behind my head a lot. I used to put a ball down there behind my ear, which
like Carlos Boozer?
Almost, no. Yeah, but now you imagine a guy doing that, but shooting from further back. He shot a lot of mid-range shots.
Yeah, that's true. So
that adds distance to my shot, so in order to make up for that distance, your shot gets flatter. So I took the arc out of my shot just from my release point because I have to basically sling the ball forward to make up for that space. So the first thing we did was get that into a straight line in front of my body, figure out where the pocket was that the groove was that just felt good, that had everything in line. And then I just built reps off of that. And then once I got that, then we started to work on speed. And speed usually comes from just being ready a lot of the times. So it was just, you know, being in a stance and figuring out how to read plays, like watching film. So like now in the game, the other reason I'm able to get shots off so fast is I know when the shot's coming two passes before, because I know the defense's rotations. I know who the guy the pass has got to go to before me, whether he's a shooter or not, whether they're going to close out or not. So those are the things that's kind of be aware of on the floor that allow you to get those things. And then just being able to understand when you need to be on the move. A guy turns his head, I can't be in the spot that I was in when he looked away.
I guess the difference between I find with, you mean, obviously professionals versus, you know, someone else is that there's like a groove, like you mentioned, the groove you take into a shot, but there's also mechanics that have to be implemented within that groove. Because I found like with Scotty Barnes, when I was looking at film of his jump shot, that he had a groove to his jumper, which is good, but I also found his torso was like moving a lot, and that could be more of the groove that's happening, but he was lacking like the structure. Mm-hmm. That has to be beside that to make sure that you're getting, you know, like you have a shot that's going to be, I mean, fluid and it's going to go in. Is that a tricky thing too for jump shooters, that you have to balance like groove versus structure?
I think on the move, especially like you're talking about, like he's a guy that has the ball in his hands. He's shooting off the dribble. That's why I think his pull-up looks better, just from, like you said, his torso moving, him not being strong through his core to shoot it. It's almost impossible to keep your shoulders stable with everything moving. Mm. And my shoulders being stable is what's going to allow me to pretty much lock in with my follow through and my elbow and everything else. So right. if I'm torqued in some type of way, then either something's got to get stronger or I got to do a bunch of reps like that to be able to shoot that ball. Because I know one of the things, like for me in the corners, I practice shooting corner threes every type of way because it's such a shorter shot. So I wanted to give myself more opportunities to be able to shoot it. I wanted to be able to shoot it coming off of screens and not being all the way square, knowing I was strong enough to get my shoulders around before my feet sometimes to be able to shoot that ball, or being able to be in an awkward stance and still shoot it fast, being able to catch bad passes, all of these things that go into the game that happen on almost every play need to be prepared for.
I found that too when I was looking at film of your shooting, is that in a lot of cases your feet aren't facing the basket, and well, they're in a lot of different directions, but your torso, your shoulders are always square. It's like I kind of find the same thing with Klay Thompson too, that sometimes, I mean, he's got like a really unique base, and he's always has like his feet somehow, some way, like facing towards the basket, but his torso and his shoulders, and even yours too, like it's always facing, like sometimes one part of your legs is like one direction and then your upper body is always towards the basket. That seems like a really thing that's like the shot readiness that you were talking about.
Yeah, it's just repping it out. Like, and it's repping stuff out at game speed. I think that's another thing, like guys kind of get cool in the summer sometimes. You can make 20 shots in a row when you just, you know, doing whatever, taking your time. Like you just sitting there like nobody's going to ever regards you, never really get to, and then the better shooter you become, you definitely don't get shots like
that. Yeah,
like, that's the other thing I have to prepare for. The better shooter I became, the less open looks I got. So now I got to be able to make some shots with slight contest. I got to be able to figure out how to make space for myself even more. I got to be able to make space for myself even if the screen is bad, even if I catch it late and the guy I face up, I got to be able to make him move his feet, whatever it is. There's all these things that you just got to keep compounding as you get better. It's like anything.
What's the most amount of threes you've made ever, like practice, whatever? Like, have you ever had a case where you've counted how many you could make in a row?
I mean, we've done stuff, but I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. I mean, I've done some, I know there's some big ones and some good stuff that I've done. Like I know there's a drill, you shoot 100 threes, I made 88 of them. You know what I mean? Like I've done stuff like that. But like as far as just like in a row or whatever it may be, there's a bunch of, you know, 20s and 30s for sure, just because that's what we do every day. We rep shots out.
Yeah.
At least a couple times a week, there's big days where it's just a bunch of shots. So but I'm not sure about the numbers off the,
but still though, 88 out of 100, that's crazy.
There was somebody, so that was, I think the people that were in the company in their list that I know of that have done this drill, I think Brent Berry's made like 92. I think Jason Terry was another person who was high 80s, had made like 88, 89. There's somebody else who has a big high number that I know of. Obviously, there's probably some other guys that got really high numbers, a lot of good shooters. But this drill, it's a pretty worldwide, I mean, I guess I'd say league-wide drill. A lot of guys do. San Antonio's really big about it. But yeah, that's one of good. I like to use it because it makes you shoot every type of shot.
What's the drill? Like, what are the details of it?
I'm not gonna lie to you, remember all the numbers where you break it down, but like say I'll shoot 5-3 stand still from the corner. Then I'll shoot 5-3s of me like spreading out to the corner like I'm shooting off a screen. Then I'll shoot 5-3s from me sliding down from the wing to the corner on the move. Then I'll shoot 5-3s from me running out of the corner to the wing on the move. And then I would shoot 5-3 threes in a row from standing still on that wing. Then I would back up to half court, run in, shoot 5 in a row from running to half court and back. Jeez. Like that. You know what I mean? And then you just add up. So you do both sides like that. And then you do, there's a few shots in the middle, like there's 5 off the dribble right, 5 off the dribble left until you get to 100. And you just count the makes off of that.
So even that, there's variety in that one. Like I'm curious what a person like yourself could make if you were just shooting threes, stand still, balls being passed you. Like how many, I mean, it might be a tough thing for you to answer, but like how many do you think you could make of those kind of variety?
I could make a big number. I don't know how to answer it, but you know, I've definitely gotten like just standing still in spots. I've gotten into the 50s. I've gotten into, you know what I mean? We've done, and then we do drills that me and George Hill do it a lot in the summertime when he's down here. We used to do drills where you can't miss 2 in a row. And those drills are the worst because me and him would make each other cold because we would both get 100 plus threes in drills like that.
Oh, jeez.
Lowry kicks. Miles.
It's a tough shot.
How are workouts differently or different when you're a shooter? Because I would think that, I mean, it's obviously strength is a big part of it, but you have to be, it's like a combination of strength and cardio because you got to be able to maintain your balance while moving this way, that way, up, forward, back, whatever. But you also have to like ensure you're, you know, maintain the strength and the cardio as well.
So the biggest thing for me that we had to do was to be able to, you know, like I said, the better you become, the better shooter you become, the more you got to compound, the more you got to find ways to challenge yourself. So the better shooter I become, us just shooting a certain number of threes from a spot doesn't do anything for me anymore.
Yeah.
Because those are, you getting to the point where you're just shooting layups. Like you get in the groove, there's going to be days you're not going to miss shots. So now we got to figure out, like you said, ways to implement the cardio, the footwork, the different situations, the numbers will add up. So, you know, we make shot series basically. So they'll be like, you're going to run off this screen, make this one. Then you're going to get screened back to make a fade. Then you're going to run under the basket. We're going to pick a side. You're going to come off. This one's going to be mid range. This one's going to be a step back. And you got to make 4 out of 6. We're going to do that 3 times. Mm-hmm. But you have to make 4 out of 6 every time to make the 1 time count. So you have to get 3 sets of that. And then the next time we do it, we add 2 more shots. So now I do the same routine. He's like, now we're going to add this shot and this shot. So now there's 6 out of 8. You know what I mean? So this is how we stack up the workout to put you in a bunch of series at a bunch of times. So that footwork and that quick, that forgetting a miss mentality has to be developed because we got to keep going.
Mm-hmm. How about strength training? What's different about that as a shooter?
I think it's just I think it's the same. I mean, not the same as like a big guy, obviously, like, or like, but as far as just, like you said, the core strength, the lot of stability stuff, obviously you need that because if you want to be able to shoot on the move, you want to be able to get yourself straight up and down. Like you said, the cardio is the biggest thing. I think when you're playing like now, the way the game is up and down and lots of reps, lots of shots, lots of screens, lots of, you got to chase that guy on the other end that's doing the same thing. So you got to be able to make shots as the game goes. You know, you got to be able to be in some type of shape. And then it's just, I think just making sure that your mobility is good. That's the biggest thing for me, because I think there was a time where when the league was first starting to get small forwards, and I was kind of ahead of that curve when I was in Indiana. So I was still guarding guys. Like I was still guarding Zach Randolph. I was still guarding Derek Favors. I was still guarding Gold. I was guarding Dirk. I guarded KG. I guarded Karl Anthony Towns. After the first time doing it, I was like, I got to get bigger.
Yeah.
Because I remember just coming home, my shoulders were hurt. Like I told my wife, right before, my sternum hurt from just guarding guys in the post and taking shoulders to the chest. So the thing for me, I went that summer and got bigger, and I didn't like it at all for what my strengths were on the other end. It just didn't allow me to move and be in the positions that I was before to get shots off and things like that. You don't see bulkier guys that do the things like you said, like Steph does, that do the things that what's his name in Miami does. They got two guys that shoot the ball.
Duncan Robinson, Max Strauss, Tyler Hero, yeah.
You don't see guys that move that way bulkier.
Yeah. Man, today's NBA, like, you're kind of made for this NBA. You're ahead of the curve, right? Of yourself, you know, guarding Zach Randolph, like that would be considered a mismatch nowadays. But I guess back then they were trying to change the style of play. And unfortunately, you had to take a lot of hits to your sternum.
Yeah. And the only thing I didn't like, because it was still new, we didn't play offense the same. It wasn't as free and as open. So there wasn't always times where I could take advantage of my strengths against bigger guys having to guard me, because we hadn't fully developed how we wanted to space the floor. We hadn't fully developed sets that would allow guys to be able to put themselves in the position to make these switches and things happen all the time. We were still trying to run, you know, certain plays. It wasn't just so free where there's so much improvising now on the floor that guys kind of just play off. It's like organized pickup now a lot.
High pick and roll, and then you just kind of roll from there, right? Pick
it, and you just figure it out and just play basketball. And it wasn't that free yet.
How do you think shooting training has changed since you were a rookie to now? Or have you seen, like, because I think probably you probably had similar programs within some, you know, some tweaks within there, of course. But do you find that shooting training for some of the younger players is different from what you encountered?
Yeah, I just think because the game changed, so it had to, you know, like the volume of the three ball is high as ever, times 1,000 probably. I don't know. Yeah. It's like not even close to what it used to be. Because I think about, like I said, Cal Kobe was on my team in Utah, and there weren't – I can't think of games where he was shooting 10 threes in games. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and this is a guy who you know is a deadly three-point shooter. We didn't even have a lot of plays then for three-point shooters. Like, there weren't – like, now we have all these intricate ways to get guys shots, the back screens and the screens and slip and pick and rolls and the fade, all these things. The spacing wouldn't allow those things back in the day, because we were still playing on the elbows. We were still throwing to the bigs on the elbows and playing at UCLA. And the court just seemed so much smaller back then.
Yeah.
So I think the training is just more so the focus. Like, so now all the things that shooters went and learned to become, to elevate themselves, these are like base things they're teaching guys. Like, it was like with Pascal.
Lowry tosses it up.
With just being able to make corner threes or just having the confidence to take the threes. We told him he was a certain percentage from three from turning his game like into what it is now. I'm not saying we deserve credit for that, but we just said it would open up so many things right now, because at that point he was playing so much more off the ball. Like Kyle and Lamar were still there. And so he was still figuring that part out. So like, we wanted to create more things for him without having it in his hands. And it was all footwork. It was just his base. It was just being able to get down, get ready, when the pass is in flight, not always having to just catch a standstill three. And that changed a lot of things for a lot of guys when we worked on it.
And that's the playing on balance, which is really, really hard, you know, to master, because it's like a combination of your footwork, it's your core strength, it's your leg strength, it's your arm strength. It's like everything. And that's why, I mean, I wanted to pivot to this because I want to get your take on this. Is, do you think that movement shooting is kind of a lost art in the NBA? Because people like yourself who could just like come off a few screens or come off a pin down or be rolling around the baseline and just vault up for a shot. Kyle Korver, like you mentioned, it's kind of unfortunate. I don't see as many guys doing that. Miami dudes that you mentioned earlier, they're doing, and it's a big part of their offense, which I love. But nowadays, I don't know, it's just the half court offense, it feels kind of basic in some ways, like excluding like a Golden State Warriors, because they're a different beast. But do you find movement shooting is a bit lost in today's NBA?
I think it's just the way the game is played. Like, a lot of guys don't have a need for it, so that's why the guys that can do it separate themselves as shooters so quickly. Like, the guys that can shoot off dribble handoffs coming full speed and running off screens full speeds and being able to get their feet down early and don't need as much space because they don't need as much time. those guys separate themselves so fast, because now the game is, like you said, it's a high pick and roll. We spread out. We see where a mismatch is, or the guy's dancing just to break you down to kick out to a standstill guy. There's not a lot of, like, there's not a Reggie Miller in today's game. Like, there's not a guy who's just playing the game off that way, like just the Rip Hamilton type way, just playing off the screens, just playing from under the basket, facing the ball. Like, that's not the way the game is played anymore.
It's unfortunate, man. Because I find that nowadays, like you mentioned the mid-range earlier, and I equate it like this. Like,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You listen to Mobb Deep, right?
Yes.
Survival of the fittest, only the strong survive. That's kind of how I view the mid-range now, because you have to have a certain kind of level of skill, and it's very hard to score from there because you just, your opportunities and your advantages are gone. Yeah. So are players not being, is it because players are so good nowadays, or is it because they're just not being taught to score from that area of the court?
Yeah, I think it's just like the emphasis that was not on the three as much is on it, and it's not on in the mid, you know what I mean? Where we don't play in that space as much, and there's less shots. Guys take less shots, and you're playing a numbers game, obviously, so they want at the rim or threes, but just because of the percentages of what you get, because now I'm talking about three threes, three possessions is a 10-0 run, you know what I mean? Like, so that's what we're rolling with. We want that. Like, that's what we're going to – if you can't get at the rim, we want that, because that mid-range shot, like you said, there's a skill set to it. Because the guys that play in the ISOs and things, you know, helps coming, doubles coming. So the shots tend to have a little bit more difficulty to them because they're not always going to be on balance. They're always going to be a little bit faster. There's always somebody else coming because there's not as much space between you getting by your man. They take, or just one-on-one in a mid post, it takes to level the footwork and ball handling and certain things to be able to do to be able to pick the ball up off the dribble and get into your shot pocket while fading to your right. Like, those are things that have to be ripped out. And a lot of guys aren't even going to be that guy in the first place. We're not even going to put you in that situation. So why are we going to drill you on that? Mm-hmm. And that's why the summertime is so big for guys who are trying to develop and turn into guys that could be those type of guys for their teams. Because I'm not like it. This is like the equivalent of like when I'm on a team with DeMar DeRozan in Toronto.
Yeah.
Every day sitting in there, like working on my mid post with him. Every day. When that's, I'm never going to be in that position on the floor with him. He's going to be right. Like, I'm never going to be in that space on this team. Like, this is not my role during the season. So, like, my coaches aren't going to, we're not going to do that after practice and before practice. This is not, we're going to watch the film and see the 10 shots you got and we're going to rep those.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. That's DeMar's working on the mid-range because DeMar –
that's his job.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's his job.
So if you're my 3-and-D guy, I'm not going to turn you into an ISO guy, not during the season.
Yeah. But then come playoff time, 5 seconds left, where's the shot coming from? The mid-range.
And then we also talking about 5 seconds left, somebody double teams. It gets swung to you and you can't just catch and shoot. Now, because you don't work on your game, you can't get a shot off in this position either.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So now this is why the summertime is so important, and which is why you got to be able to add these things to your game.
When I was watching the Dallas and Phoenix series, sorry, the I forgot who they played. Dallas and Warriors, obviously. Jeez, that's what it was. And I was watching Luka and the players that he has around him, like they're talented players, right? But it's that ability to attack a closeout and to be able to create offense out of that situation. That's a very difficult thing. And there aren't that many players who can do that along with being that 3-and-D kind of player. Like, it's a very rare skill set. And that's where I find, like we're talking about, that players have to have that ability, because it's not something that you can do during the season because you're in the season. But off season, like being able to not just like hit a three, open three, you got to be able to create out of that shot for yourself, for your teammates. And that's where that footwork mid-range game really comes into play. And that's how you become really versatile.
And I think the other thing too, though, there's a lot of guys who are way more talented than you would think too, that have been known to just be able to kind of shoot the ball and fall into that role. It also becomes kind of mental. Like, you just kind of fall into that role, mm-hmm. and it's not in the forefront of your mind. So, like, you get in the game, you get in situations, and you don't react the same. You don't just let things flow. You react to, oh, I can't shoot it, so I better just pass it, because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And so it's a tricky space to be in, because for the coaches to trust you to be able to do those things, you got to do it. Sure, but you've been put in this role of like, yo, what are you doing? Like, everybody's screaming if you start dribbling, you know? So it's a, you just gotta pick your battles right. That's what it really is.
And like all the shots for some players come from certain parts of the court. Like, it's either three or it's layups. But I think people sometimes forget is that they are working on those shots in the mid-range, but you got to have that confidence in yourself and from your coaching staff that they're going to let you take that pull-up, you know, 15-footer, because they trust your work and you trust your work. And then all it has to get connected into the ball going in the hoop.
Just think about it. Would you shoot a high percentage of a shot that you've been told not to shoot?
Exactly.
How could you?
No.
Like, even if you got an open one, you're already thinking about you're not supposed to be shooting it.
Yeah, that's in your head. And then you know that if you miss this shot, the bench is right there, and that's where you're going.
that's the biggest part of the battle, is just believing that in the first place.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. How do you feel about the now players shooting from like 30 feet? Did you feel that you were kind of doing that yourself, but the jumpers now are very different? A lot of guys are shooting from their chest versus above their head.
I mean, obviously if you can make them, like, it's like the Steph thing, like these are shots that we had deemed bad shots for so long, and then they became good shots for Steph.
Decide not to use it. Curry way downtown. Bang! With 6/10 of a second remaining.
So I mean, it's just about the work. It's about just repping things out, being put in situations. But I don't think you should just be hoisting them. I think guys that are really good floor spacers and stance shooters need to be able to extend their range now, because of the way we play. That was the reason mine that I did it. I needed to be able to extend my range, one, to get more spacing for the players that that are the ball handlers, the penetrators, or in pick and rolls, or make more space for defenders have to help. So now you got to make a decision. You're going to stop the dunk, or are you going to stop me from getting the catch and shoot? And that was my whole reasoning, because I wanted to be it and to create more opportunities for myself to be able to shoot the ball. So if I can make this a good shot, that's, you know, that'll add 2 threes to the game, just because I can shoot it from 2 steps further back.
Yeah. When I was in Charlotte for the All-Star game, I asked Dame Lillard.
Lillard, long range three, and it's good at the buzzer! Damian Lillard, are you kidding me?
When did he decide that he was going to start shooting the ball from like well behind the three-point line? He's like, I started this in high school. Because of exactly what you're talking about. He's like, I saw the way the trend was going, and I was being guarded so heavily. And I figured, well, I mean, if I just keep on inching closer and closer towards half court, theoretically I'll be open. Right. And so we just started hoisting them, and then, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
If you want more than an open shot for your best player. So
yeah, for sure. How important is your handle when it comes to being a good pull-up shooter?
I think ball handling is important for shooters. Like, I know people like to think about, like, because now you watch the internet and you watch trainers on the internet and they're doing all the crazy stuff and they're like, you know, that's not basketball. I think that stuff is to challenge your handle so you feel more comfortable with the ball in your hand. For me, I start every workout with ball handling because the more comfortable the ball feels in my hands, the more ways I can get the ball into my shot pocket without fumbling and feeling uncomfortable with the ball. Like, so per se, like we talked about, a bad pass. A bad pass comes down to my knees, but I have good hands that I've trained to be able to find grips on the ball in any type of way, you know, or to be able to pick the ball up off the dribble if I slightly lose it. Or like I said, I got to create a shot with 2 or 3 seconds on the clock. I need to be able to get that ball from the floor to my shot pocket.
Yeah.
I need to be able to do that. That helps with speed. And that's why I believe in ball handling for shooters so much, because it's got to feel like I don't want to be thinking about how the ball feels in my hands when I got all these other things I'm focusing on. Like I that should be certain. Like it should hit my hands and I should feel good. It don't have to be on the seams. It don't have to be, because I've practiced every type of way I could put that ball up.
Yeah. Do you still have CJ's PJs?
I have a couple pairs. Yes. I actually, because we just moved, so I actually just found some like moving in a box, and we had a good laugh about it.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the nickname CJ Kilometers, or were you like, that's a bit much?
It was funny. Like, it makes sense. Like, it's a lot to say. It's long.
Yeah, it is.
But like, you know, it makes sense, I guess. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Hey, Matt Devlin, he's one of the GOATs, so it wasn't a problem for him to get that out of his mouth.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely. Out to him. Yeah.
I want to ask you about some of the other your bench mob members, because, well, first off, when I thought about that bench mob, and it was so unique, and the reason why I felt it was so unique, not just because of your defense and the hustle that you guys played with, but also I found that you were actually, when it came to the half court offense, like you were the focal point, and it was like your gravity as a shooter coming off screen. People are just like looking around this way, that way, like where's CJ? And then from there, a lot of the half court offense was able to be figured out. And then Fred's getting open looks, Pascal's getting open looks. Your take on, not, I'm not trying to put, sorry, any controversy, but like, what do you feel like your role was with the bench mob?
I mean, it was that. Like, obviously, it was an experience thing. I had the most experience of those guys and just kind of being a leader. And all I ever did was encourage them.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. Like, I don't want people to think that, like, sometimes people talk to me like I had so much to do with those guys turning another corner. Those guys were who they were when I got there.
Sure.
Like, the only thing I did was scream at them for not shooting the ball or for not being aggressive. You know what I mean? I just instilled more my confidence in them to give more of it. Like, that's all. And we believed in each other. We played unselfishly. But like, as far as you said, yes, I tried to carry that threat. That was my role, because I was good because those guys, DeLon and Fred, were great penetrators, because Yach was a great screener. So like, and then Yach got layups because I was a shooter. I would catch it and they jump out and I'd be able to get bounce passes to him and get pocket passes to him. Same with Pascal. So everybody's strengths just melded. And it just kind of happened organically. We spent a lot of time in the gym together from the second I got there. And, you know, we did everything. We shot together after practice, before practice. We ripped all our plays out together. Obviously, when we scrimmaged bench mob against, if you want to call it that, the second unit against the first unit. Like, we competed. We made those guys better. They made us better.
With a few of these current Raptors, Fred, Pascal, and OG, I wanted to get your take on your first impressions and how that's correlated to where they are now. So Fred VanVleet, what was your first impression when you met Fred, and how do you think that's translated to where he is now?
The biggest thing is that, you know, the reason I called him steady, like I called him steady Freddy, because like nothing rocked him. Like nothing sped him up. Nothing changed his approach. And that comes from a lot of things, you know, his mentality off the floor. The route he had to go through to be even there when I got there, you know, he's like, at this point, like, what's harder than that? You know what I mean? I'm in the game now. Like, this is the easy part. Like, this is what I wanted. So
yeah,
I always saw that from him. He always carried himself in a way where you knew, like, I wasn't worried about him. Like, I wasn't worried of him for going in a slump or making a bad play if it was going to mess him up for 6 games or nothing like that. You know, like, never – he was always going to be who he is.
Were you the one who started calling him Steady Freddy?
Yeah.
I had no idea about that. That's still said these days. Did you know he still calls Steady Freddy?
I didn't know that, no.
Wow, and it started with CJ Miles. See, the things you learn. That's crazy. What about Pascal?
Pascal was just like, wait, P skills.
Sorry. Yes, P skills. Yes.
So that was it. You know what I mean? Like we used to always joke, like he'd make a play, he'd scream from the bench, he's got too many skills. Like, because he just had the potential to be anything. You know what I mean? Like you see a guy who can run, jump, doesn't get tired, handle getting better, great instincts, he defends, he competes, he passes. Like he's literally got the potential to be anything. And like I said, he was that when I got there. We just encouraged him to be more open to those situations. We encouraged him to shoot open threes. We encouraged him to put the ball on the floor. Like then the coast to coast stuff started happening. Like the spin move was always there. Like this always. It was literally just work. It was reps and confidence. Like, and they go hand in hand, but that was all it ever was.
He took a real jump this year. And I mean, I say that in the sense that I think people were a little bit too down on his past couple of years, because I don't think they're really that bad, but the jump he made this year, as we talk about the mid-range, was I found the mid-range is that he was able to hit. He had a lot more dribbling combinations that he would be able to implement into mid-range shots. Fair.
Yeah. But I also think like, I think he's like to talk about like the down years, the air quotations, like, like when you're looking at it from the outside, like people just, they're only gauging from the near history.
Yes.
Not looking at it as a whole, or they're just looking at the last game I watched, he was 1-for-12. You know what I mean? Like everybody's is like, the fan ride is as crazy as anything, you know what I mean? Like, because they're emotionally charged by every moment, and the player has to look at it so differently.
Yeah.
And that's where the disconnect is, I think, when they hear, sometimes they hear guys talk about he's going to be all right, because he is. Because he's thinking about the fact that I'm going to play 100 games this year.
Exactly.
Like, the fan, no, the, like, they're thinking about last night and FanDuel and like, or the bet they made, whatever it is, you know what I mean? That's part of the game too. I'm not knocking anything that's part of it, but I'm just saying like that's the difference in it. And sometimes people just, and then the season ends, they're just like, well, he still averaged 20 something, and you know what I mean? And
exactly. People didn't realize. The wins and losses and how it translates to how a player is viewed, I find is one of the biggest reasons why Pascal, for instance, got way too much criticism over his, you know, the bubble season and the Tampa season, is that because the Raptors weren't winning, that just was automatically deemed that he wasn't playing well. Meanwhile, I mean, a different team, different strategies, different roster players, different freaking country, and that all translated to him potentially not having as strong of a year, but I also found that he was making small strides within his game. And when you are already this good, there's not going to be like this massive jump all the time. It's going to be like small incremental progress.
Yeah. I also think like that's the price you pay for becoming the man also. And that just goes with it. Like the team's not playing well. The first thing I'm going to think about is the best player on that team.
Yeah.
Like that's everybody. Like that's the first thing you're going to look at. Like, what is he doing to, and sometimes it isn't always scoring. Like, it isn't always, like, you see guys who have been these prolific scorers for so long and they can't really figure out, like, that next step. And then all of a sudden, the year they average 8 assists instead of 3, everything changes.
Yeah.
Because it's literally just those 3 or 4 extra passes that changes the way the game is played. And a fan is not looking at it that's on that small of a scope. Like, They just know we're winning now. He must be playing well. Like, you know what I mean? It's not looked at as he just literally made a dump off pass for one of the young bigs to get a dunk, and now that guy plays better the whole game.
Exactly.
Not looked at that small. And it's hard to when you're just watching the games, like for a pure entertainment. You're not breaking it all the way down like that all the time.
What did you, what stood out to you about this past season from him?
He was less up and down about him not playing well than he was the year before. And I know there was a lot of things going on that, you know, he had some things that weren't so just basketball going on. Obviously, it affects you, like the emotion and how you feel. But like, I noticed that, like, if he did struggle a little bit, or like when I was at the game in San Antonio, watching him miss a pass or miss a play, miss a shot, it didn't weigh on him.
Yeah.
And I think the year before, I think I could see it on him some nights. Like he was fighting with himself. You know, like, because he was like, I got it. He's trying to claw his way out, and he's hitting himself across the head because he's not doing it in one play. And I didn't see that this year. Like, he just believed in his work, and he talked about that, you know, and he does work. That's one thing he does. And it's just, you know, all right, I was 3 for whatever tonight, but the next day I'm coming back, I'm going to figure out the little things I didn't do that's going to get me going, and I'm going to be the all-star again. I'm going to be the all-star that night. Like, yeah. It's nice like that.
I feel like next season is going to be his best one yet. That's my feeling with him. I think he's really found something. And as you said, you know, being able to silence the noise as a star player, being able to block that out, very important to success. And he's harnessed that a little bit. So I think he's going to be just fine. Last one for you. Yeah, go ahead.
I was about to say, I think guys that care the level that he cares, like, that takes a transition.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy who everybody loves. And he wants everybody to love him. And as everybody does, you know what I mean? And he goes out of his way to be a good, he's like a very good-hearted person. Not that a lot of guys aren't. I'm just saying, I know this personally about him.
Yeah. Last one, OG. OG Anunoby. What were your first impressions of him? And how has that translated to who? Young OG Prince Anunoby. Because he's a prince around here. Yeah. That's he's what we call him. Yeah. Yeah. Your thoughts on him?
He is different. That was the first thing, you know. But I, like, I always try to, you know, feel out the young guys, try to make a relationship if I can with them, because I was the youngest guy on my team for 3 years, like, because of the rule being made after. So now everybody after me that came was older than me, even after. So I know what it's like to kind of be that little bit of separation, just being young. So I just tried to make them feel comfortable. Like, you here for a reason. Just remember that first. Like, don't let that, there's going to be a little bit of, you know, the joke and messing with you because you're the young boy. That's part of, like, just part of the road. But he's very intrigued by the game, by, like, he's always trying to learn. And that's what, and he has a mind like that for everything. But that was the first thing I picked up from him. Like, he wanted to know. He wanted to be better. He wanted to know why vets got, like, he was like, why do vets not have to do this and I got to do that? It wasn't because he wanted to be a vet. He wanted to skip the process. He was just like, well, it should be even. Like, it wasn't about anything but that. Because he was like, well, I did this and I should be able to do that. And that was the one thing that was funny about it, because he always would be like, well, I played this many minutes last night. I shouldn't have to do this. Like, yeah, but you're also 19. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But he has developed tremendously. Like, that he's put things in his game that I didn't even see when I was there, as far as, like, his ball handling has gotten so much better. His shooting got better rather quickly, but I think that's they do a good job up there working on that. And that was a little easier thing to fix, but, like, just his recognition of he's posting up now. He's a freak athlete. Like, he's strong, long, fast. Like, and then he's got a little edge that's grown in him. Like, you see him getting a little chippy on the floor. You didn't see that a lot before. And he's not back. There's no back down in him. And I think that's fun to see when he's going to be guarding the best guy on the floor, you know?
Yeah, sure. I said I was going to ask you about some of those Raptor players from your years there, but I didn't want to ask you about Scottie Barnes. Kind of have to, because he's a different kind of beast. And that's the reason why you and I ended up connecting. So first question is, why is it harder for him perhaps to have a really stable, established, consistent jumper than perhaps someone else?
I don't think, I think just, like, there's just factors that roll in that he's just learning still. Like, you know what I mean? He's never had to lean on it as much either. Like, the position he's in, because now if you're a four, you're a stretch four. Like, every four is a stretch
You're
four.
A five, essentially.
You're not just a shooter. Like, you know what I mean? Just the position you're on the floor is different. And I think not coming, like, he didn't come in as a shooter. Like, so, like, only guys I feel like that carry confidence like that as a shooter coming into the league right away are, like, real scoring shooting guards. You know what I mean? Like, guys that this is what they do. Like, he came in with a plethora of things that he does. And I think the shooting is just catching up to him recognizing shots, recognizing when to take threes or when not to, or playing closeouts and the spacing that he has to play in and how he can get them and the guys he's playing with. You still remember, like, this is played this many games with these guys. Like, he's learning, like, this is the start of the ground floor for this team that they have now. Hmm. And there's just, like, reps that are going to come now. And then it's just a flat-out confidence from finishing the season. Like, that just experience, minutes, games, air balls, great games, you know what I mean? Like, all of that, all the emotions that come with it, all the time that's got to be put in to correct things, like figuring out how to take care of your body through a season. You never play this many games, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that go into this. And that's why you see so fast in the summer him being able to make the type of strides he's made in his shot, because he's like, okay, like, he's okay, I need to do this, I need to do that. He probably knew more, most of the things that were on the list that they were going to give him at the exit meeting before he even had to go sit down with coach, because he seems like the type of guy that just wants to work. So he's probably already text his trainer, like, already text his guys, like, that I'm coming home and we're going to get to it.
Sure. How are exit interviews? How do they work? I've always been curious about that.
I mean, it's literally just like, I mean, I never had another job besides basketball, so I'm not going to say that. But I would imagine it's like you sit down with your boss and they pretty much tell you, like, you know, things you want to improve. They thank you for the things you did well. Like, and then y'all have, it's a conversation. Like, you know, you talk about things. They want to know what they can do better, obviously, as coaches and in front of office, and things that can help players, because they want to maximize your talent. So it's literally, I mean, how you would think, you know. And then there's a talk about what you want to add, what we want to do. I mean, some free agents actually mean is probably a little different, you know, because you're not going to be under contract, so
they're a little quieter.
Quiet, or it's like, we'll see you in, you know, July, or hope you'll be back, or hopefully you'll be back, or there's nothing said because you're not coming back. You might not even have an exit meeting if you're not coming back. Like,
depends. After his rookie season, because like you talked about, there's a lot of different transitions that have been going on for him as he's acclimating to becoming an NBA player. What were your impressions of his season? From, like, top to bottom, what makes you go, what are your takeaways from it?
The big thing is, too, though, also talking about that, like, he's going to learn from, like, but you watch him and you don't look at him and think, like, man, he's far away from it. He didn't look like a rookie. He didn't look shook. He didn't look like he was out of place and things like that. It's just, you just look at, I'm just looking at him knowing that there's so much more he's going to get better at, which is the scary part, really, because he was really, really, really good. Great enthusiasm. He plays, he competes super hard, like, he loves to play, and you can see that. Like, he's always cheesing, always screaming. He's excited about the game. And I think that's, especially now with a lot of young players, that's one thing that you're excited to see from a young guy. Because there's a lot of basketball players now that don't like to play basketball. Like, they do not like to be in the gym. Like, having a guy with that amount of talent that likes to be in the gym is – it's kind of like the Pascal situation. Like, he's really got the potential to be anything, and he's more polished now than Pascal was at this stage. Like, he's got more stuff in his game already, a little bit more skillful. Obviously, like, the time he's coming in, that stuff is praised more, like, and the situations are different, but still, he's got a lot to him. And the competitive edge, like, with that skill set is what gives him the potential to be, you know, perennial all-star, great, 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 long, long career.
Yeah, sure. The amount of players that I heard, like, not just any players, but like Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green saying this guy is going to be special. Like, that's not a word that's thrown around all the time.
Especially about those guys, because you got to think about the competitive nature also.
Sure. Right.
Like, you're supreme competitors to be at the level there. They're not going to talk about a guy like a young guy, like, he's not, you know what I mean? They're not going to give him a special tag for no reason.
Yeah. Trivia time for you. Trivia time for CJ Miles. You ready for two questions? Just two. They're about you. I want to know if you remember when your career high points was. Who was against, how many points, all that.
I remember I don't remember the exact year, but it was against Minnesota. It was 40. And it was because it was around my birthday. So that's what I remember. It was like the 16th or the on the other side of my birthday, one of them. I know it's like somewhere in that space, close to my birthday, close to March 18th, because I remember being excited. That I just remember that time so well because it was close to my birthday also.
Yeah. That's what it was. 40 points, March 16th, 2011. Oh. Utah Jazz versus Timberwolves. You hit six threes and shot 14 of 18. Damn.
That was a fun night.
Yeah, that was a fun night.
I remember that night, and I remember checking out of the game in the second quarter, and Coach Corbin screaming at me like I was playing terrible. Because I was like, why is he yelling at me? Because I'm so locked in, I can't really grasp what he's saying. And then when I finally sit down, he's like, don't have a good night, have a great night. So he was really trying to encourage me to keep.
Oh, I see.
But I only heard the yelling when I was coming off the floor because I'm like trying to stay in that space.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was everything was there. Lauren was there. My wife, well, my girlfriend at the time was there because she had came to see me for my birthday. Like, that was a special time.
Oh, you showed out in front of the girlfriend too. That must have helped.
That happened more times than I care to admit. Like, I didn't think that it was what was happening, but it definitely happened. Yeah.
Do you remember like the feeling around that game or when you were in it? Are you just like so locked in where you feel like the basket is the size of the ocean?
So like the biggest thing for me is that I remember like the play, but I remember not thinking. I remember like that's like ultimate freedom to me. It's like the best feeling because like I'm just reacting to everything.
Mm.
Like everything is just coming in. Like as I see it, I'm doing what the flow is telling me to do. He's too far shot, closed out, drive right, whatever it is. Like however the screen is happening, however the pass has got to be made. Like I'm just seeing it so slowly because I'm just. Like, it's weird because it's constant motion, but I'm still, like, it's like I'm just deflecting what's happening, really. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I see, yeah.
Coming, boom, and I'm just stepping to the side, or he's too far back, and so he deserves a shot. Like, it's not really a flurry of any type of way.
And everything's just working.
Yeah, everything's just working. Yeah. Like, it's like I did a workout that scripted the game before the game, and I knew it was going to happen almost. It's like that type of feeling.
Other question I had for you is, what's the most amount of threes you have made in an NBA game? And who is it against, all that?
Oh, in Cleveland, 10, I believe.
Yes.
10. Yep. It was against Philly.
Yes.
Because the last three was against LaVoy Allen. He ended up being my teammate in Indy, and I talked to him about it. That's what I remember. And also because I remember, like, I think it was the next year or whatever, like Twitter's going crazy, or the year after, and Kyrie's about to break the record. And they're like, people are like tweeting me and calling me and texting me, and like, he beat it.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I definitely remember that night. That was the same type of thing, just no thought. But I can remember all the shots from the game.
Really?
Yeah.
That was January 7th, 2014, 10 threes, 34 points. And as you said, it was the Cavaliers versus the 76ers. What did you talk to LaVoy Allen about?
I just let him know, like, that, like, I was being just joking with him because we were literally sat beside each other in the locker room in Indiana. Like, we had a good relationship. And anybody knows the boy, they'll tell you he jokes. He is one of the funniest people I've been on a team with. And we just teasing him about it, like, just thanking him for letting me set the record type thing.
I'm guessing there was no hard feelings when Kyrie passed it. No, of course not. Yeah. No. You guys don't roll like that.
Actually, the game was out of hand, too. So, like, it wasn't like it was a three to win the game. And so he probably – the game was over. Like, we were up. This is before the process.
What's that?
This is before the process in Philly. There's no –
Yeah, so those are the dark days. That's how they got the process. That's how the rebels started.
We were both in the dark days. There's no problem. There's the dark days. This is the – shaping of Kyrie and Tristan and the young guys, and then that team is like trying to figure out where they're going.
There you go. This has been a lot of fun, CJ, man. I thank you so much for giving me all kinds of time, being very gracious about it. What's on the horizon for you? What's going on? What's next? Tell the peoples.
I mean, I'm really just enjoying life, man. I'm just, what's in front of me, I tackle it, you know? Like,
nice.
I'm working out, playing basketball. I love to still be in the gym. I'm still in shape, you know? Opportunities to play as they come. Like, I look at them. I do want to play. You know, I did the 10-day. I got the 10-day in Boston for being with the Ignite, you know. And I felt like that was, like, the worst thing that could have happened because it gave me the even bigger itch than I had before I got to that, you know.
Yeah.
But I was still in a space where I was just getting really back in the groove of my body feeling the way I wanted, because like I said before, the minor surgeries, like they were minor, but they just took time.
Sure.
And they just took time to heal. And that time down, like just from not being able to play, just having to build the body back up the way to the shape that I want to be in to do what I do, just took time also, you know? And then of course I get the 10 day gets COVID, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah, all know, that like, happens. Exactly.
But yeah, man, I'm just enjoying it, man. I'm just moving as long as I can, playing as long as I can, having fun, raising my kids. Like I really.
Just, life's good.
I'm happy.
That's nice. That's awesome. G League Ignite this season coming up. What do you think?
I don't know. We definitely talked about it. Me and Rod Strickland talked about it before I left. It's definitely you know, on my list, like right in front of me, is definitely one of my options that I really would consider. Want to be back, because I feel like the difference you can make to help those young guys is really big for guys getting ready to go into the league. You know,
no question. And
play,
because you're not done. There's no question about that. You're not done with your playing days. You still got plenty left in the tank. And who knows what happens in the world, man? Who knows?
People think I'm 42 years old. That's the problem, too.
Yeah, you're only 34, right?
I just turned 35.
We'll see how it goes, man. Thank you so much for all your time. It was much appreciated. This was a very informative. I hope the people like it. I think they will, because you got yourself a brilliant shooting and basketball mind. So thanks, CJ, man. This was awesome.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for having me.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.